All right, let's do this. It's been 3 months coming, but here we are finally with a new episode of ASO Radio. I, of course, am your host, NZ17, and this episode is just going to be mammoth in the amount of content it has, and we're not even skipping the news section, so it's going to be extra, extra large. Well, we've got a lot to cover, including over a dozen anime reviews and a ton of video game reviews and some news. So, let's get on with the show. Our anime news is courtesy of Anime News Network at animenewsnetwork.com. First up, Kawasaki Frontale Soccer Team plans an anime for its mascot. The Sports Nippon newspaper has reported on December 27th that the Japanese soccer team Kawasaki Frontale is planning the first anime based on a franchise in its league. The project will start before the March season opening with a 15-second promotional video featuring the J-League team's mascot, a blue dolphin named Frontacoon. After that, the team is considering plans for a regular anime series that will also feature the players on the team. The team is planning to expand Frontacoon's storyline by creating a family for him, similar to Sazae-san's. If the planned regular series goes forward, the team is aiming for a program of 30-minute episodes. With 50,000 regular attending spectators and an average of 17,338 attendees per game last year, Frontale has the largest audience of any J-League team. Although Sports Nippon describes this project as the first anime for a J-League team, there have been manga and anime that depict J-League as part of their plots. Notably, Captain Tsubasa manga artist Yoichi Takahashi created Hungry Heart, a story about teenagers who dream about playing for a J-League or for European Football Soccer League team. He published the manga in Akita Shoten's weekly Shonen Champion magazine, and it was eventually adapted into a year-long television anime series. Gundam characters are now hawking instant noodles in Japan. Nissin, the Japanese ramen maker that is famous worldwide for the Cup Noodles brand, has posted two commercials in which characters of the classic Mobile Suit Gundam robot anime series profess their love for Nissin's Donbei instant noodles. The Mireru commercial, in low, middle, or high quality, recreates the final scenes of the first Gundam story with the main character Muro. However, the commercial has Muro, starved into delirium after the long battle, crying for joy upon seeing a floating bowl of instant noodles. In the Eat Up My Countrymen commercial, the enemy Xenon leader, Ginrin Gabi, gives his Sig Xeon propaganda speech that has been memorized by Gundam fans worldwide. However, instead of saying Sig Xeon, he now says Juicy Udon. Another line spoofs how the sound of fried tempura, Sakusaku, sounds like the Xeon's main grunt robot, the Zaku. Toru Furuya and Banjo Ginja reprise their roles of Amuro and Ginrin, respectively, with the rewritten lines in the commercials. The Donbei Gundam commercial started airing in Japan this past month, but Nissin has used pop culture to hawk its noodles for years. It is marking its 35th anniversary by sponsoring the Freedom science fiction anime series with character creator Katsuhiro Tomo from Akira and Memories, and a theme song by singer Hikaru Utada, who also did Evangelion Hanayori Dango 2. It also ran a series of commercials that has Masahiro Nakai, the leader of the pop idol group SMAP, interacting with Freedom's main lead, Takeru, or taking over Nissin as its new president. Next, Himitsu, Top Secret Manga, gets TV anime in spring. Haku Sensha's Melody Manga magazine has announced that Reiko Shimizu's Himitsu, Top Secret Manga, which is a philosophical science fiction suspense piece, will be adapted for a spring 2008 television broadcast. Even though Shimizu has been publishing manga for over 25 years and has created such acclaimed works as Moonchild and Kugaya Hime, Himitsu Top Secret will be the first manga of hers to be animated. Since Melody is a bi-monthly magazine, Shimizu has only compiled 3 volumes of this manga thus far since she started in 1999. The story takes place 5 decades from now, when brain scanners have been perfected to the point that the government can retrieve up to 5 years' worth of memories from people's minds, even if they are dead. The investigators of the National Research Institute of Police Science's 9th Forensic Laboratory must weigh the ethical choices in the ultimate invasion of privacy as they delve into people's minds to solve crimes. And what's this? An end to Zatch Bell? Yes, after 7 years and 232 installments, the end is now in sight. Manga creator Motoko Raiku has ended the Konjiki no Gash, or Zatch Bell in English markets, comedy adventure manga in issue 4-5 released on December 26th of Shogakukan's weekly Shonen Sunday magazine. After 7 years, 31 volumes, and 223 installments, Viz Media has released 16 volumes in English so far. In his backstage blog on the day of the release, Raiku notes that the manga was his first weekly serialization, and he thanks his readers for following his manga up until the end. NHK's Domakun to invade American Nickelodeon in early 2008. ICV2 retail news sources reporting that the Nickelodeon Television Network will air the Domo series of animated shorts in America in the first quarter of 2008. The stop-motion anime, which is based on the Domo-kun mascot of the Japanese public broadcaster NHK, consists of 26 two-minute episodes. Nickelodeon first announced its involvement in the anime in May of 2006. Big Ten Entertainment announced in November that it licensed Dark Horse Comics, Concept One, and other companies to make figures, collectibles, stationery, fashion accessories, fuzzy dice, and more of the series. According to that announcement, Logotel has developed a junior girls apparel line which includes t-shirts, fashion tops, fleece, hosiery, and flip-flops, as well as men's neckwear. Play Along has also released the obligatory plush toys of Domo-kun, and briefly stated Incorporated has released sleepwear and underwear. Let us just hope that it's as popular here as it is in Japan. New book and a journal issue look at anime and anime fans. The academic publishing house Palgrave Macmillan has officially released From Impressionism to Anime, Japan is Fantasy and Fan Cult in the Eyes of the West, Professor Susan Napier's second full-length critical study of the world of Japanese animation. Her 2001 Anime from Akira to Mononoke book, also published by Palgrave, examined various well-known anime series to identify major themes common to all anime. The new book expands on Napier's earlier work by looking at fans of Japanese animation both in Japan and in America. Separately, the University of Minnesota Press has announced the publication of the second annual volume of Mechadamia, the only English-language scholarly journal devoted to anime, manga, and other aspects of Japanese popular culture. The theme of this year's volume is Networks of Desire, and it contains over 20 original and translated essays, reviews, interviews, and commentary on topics like the evolution of themes in Ramen One Half, fan fiction, and the meaning of the theme of flight in Poco Rosso, and imagery in Haibane Renmei. The next two issues of the journal are already being planned. They will deal with the themes of war and violence in Japanese popular culture and with how anime and manga approach the question of the limits of being human. We also have a few anime convention updates this episode. Edward Fortner, the chairman of the Anime Mid-Atlantic Convention, which was to be held at the Hyatt Regency Crystal City Hotel outside Washington, D.C. from June 13th through June 15, 2008, has announced on the convention's website that the Hyatt has decided to cancel AMA's contract because of reported double booking for that weekend. The convention itself will not be canceled, however, but will move to the Holiday Inn Executive Center in Virginia Beach, Virginia, over 200 miles away. The Hyatt Regency Crystal City has been one of the most convention-friendly hotels in the U.S. In the past, it has hosted the Otakon and Katsukon events, and last month it was a venue for Anime USA. 2008 will be the first year that the Anime Mid-Atlantic will leave the Richmond, Virginia area. In a separate development, AnimeCons.com reports that Anazona has canceled its 2008 convention because not enough rooms were booked in advance at the Wigwam Resort Hotel in Litchfield Park, Arizona. A minimum of 75 reservations was needed by December 16th. Anazona staff still hopes to return in 2009. Business Week is reporting on manga popularity in Europe. An article on the Business Week magazine notes that a recent study by Japan's External Trade Research Organization has found that Europe is the world's second largest market for manga. Sales of manga in France and Germany alone total $212 million US dollars, compared with approximately $200 million in the United States. Manga publisher Tokyopop, which maintains a German office, calculates that some 70% of all comics sold in that country originate in Japan, while according to figures assembled by the French Association of Comic Critics and Journalists, some 40 different publishers released 1,152 individual volumes of manga in that country throughout the course of 2007. In the United States, 2007 saw the publication of 1,468 volumes, and this number is projected to grow to over 1,700 next year. Broccoli Books to release solo manga this summer. Broccoli Books has announced on its fan club mailing list and on its blog that it will be releasing the solo manga by Chaco Obeno in North America. The manga just began its release in Japan serialization on December 21st of last year in MediaWorks' monthly comic Dengeki Gaio magazine, and one volume has been compiled so far. Solo is a fantasy multimedia project which features the story writer Naoki Hisayo from Canon and the original character designer Narunao from DC Kappa DiCapo F, a translation of memories. The story is seen through the eyes of Yorito Morimoto, a boy whose hobby is taking photographs of the sky. One day, when he goes to a park to take a picture of the moment when the blue skies turn to night at dusk, he comes across an unusual girl named Matsuri Shiho. Matsuri has a lifelong secret that is only hinted by her longing to see blue skies. That secret brings the two together as Yorito protects Matsuri from a pursuer that is intent on harming her. In addition to the manga, Soul aired as a 13-episode television anime series this year. Two unaired episodes were also released on DVD with the other episodes. Parts of the story were also told in audio drama format and were released on CD and on the internet. And remember, Acer Radio gets its anime news courtesy of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Now, normally on ASO Radio, when we have a whole bunch of reviews to do, I refer to it as shotgun reviews because we go through them really fast and take care of business. But we have so many different shows to review on this particular episode of ASO Radio, it might be well more appropriate to call this minigun reviews because we're going to need a whole lot of bullets to take all of these down. So, let's get started with Assembler Insert. This is a short two-episode OVA, or OAV, all depending on how you like to say it, and I like to say OAV. Anyways, what we have here is essentially a police force is unable to take down a wild band of criminals, and so they decide the only way to do this is by using a pop idol. Why a pop idol? Because it can go and win back the public adoration which the police themselves have lost due to their very many bumblings on trying to attempt to apprehend this gang of criminals. So they go and get an unwitting girl to go and be part of this competition. Why? Well, besides the fact that she's cute, she can bend steel beams with her own hands without even realizing it. So they go and send her out to go and take down the crew, and she does quite valiantly take down the gang of thieves. However, this show is rather light on the brain cell usage, and its animation is definitely dated by today's standards. Additionally, the DVD that it comes on only has two episodes for a total of something like 60 minutes, and doesn't really feel like it's worth the money. Now, you might say back in the day, oh, you got a little anime for a lot of money, but in the case of Assemble Insert, it is money not well spent, and so this one gets a neutral. While it's somewhat entertaining, it's just not worth spending the time to watch. Next up, we have Aura Battler Dunbine by the creator of the Gundam series. Instead of doing what he usually does with Gundam, he decided instead to have biological mecha for this show. In other words, they are living beings, and it involves people getting kidnapped and brought to this other planet. And all in all, I didn't enjoy this one, so it's getting a not recommended. Next up, Barefoot Gen. Barefoot Gen takes place a little bit before and after the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Unfortunately, Barefoot Gen is a little boy who's involved in all of this horrible atrocities of war, and he loses quite a lot of important things to him in the process. It's a very depressing movie, but it gives you a glimmer of hope and sees how children themselves dealt with war, and is semi-autobiographical, as the director of this piece himself was involved, or rather I should say the author of the Barefoot Gen manga upon which this is based, he was actually a survivor of the bombing of Hiroshima, and in that essence gives it a certain poignancy you couldn't get from an outsider perspective. So Barefoot Gen is a very excellent movie. However, it is also a pair of movies. Yes, Barefoot Gen and its sequel Barefoot Gen 2 are included on the same DVD. Unfortunately, the first one, while inspiring in many ways, is also very depressing as Gen loses a lot of family members and things that are important to him. And so it's really hard to watch both of these movies back to back. It's best to watch Barefoot Gen one day and wait a while and watch the second one as a follow-up. So Barefoot Gen, I'm giving it a recommended. I liked it. It's really well worth seeing if you're a film buff. However, it can be a bit trying on emotions, and you're pretty much sapped by the end of the first movie. And the second movie isn't nearly as strong as the first anyways. So Barefoot Gen, I might have to come back and review my rating at the end of this minigun review section, but I'm going to go ahead and go and give it a recommended. Next up, El Hazard OVA. I'm only going to be reviewing episodes 1 through 4 because Green Scene's been terrible at getting this series and a few others to me. El Hazard is about a bunch of students and a teacher who have been sapped from the real world into the world of El Hazard, and they have been summoned there in order to go and rescue everybody from, they've basically been designated by prophecy to rescue everybody. However, unlike in the real world, they've been granted special powers, some that are activated only through certain ways, and unfortunately for one of our male leads, he looks just like a certain princess who happens to be missing, and so he's forced to take her place, take her clothes, and has to act like a royal in her absence. So, El Hazard is a really great series. I can see why it's considered an anime classic right up there with Tenchi Muyo, and so I'm giving El Hazard OVA a highly recommended. Next up, Galaxy Fräulein Yuna. Unfortunately, Galaxy Fräulein Yuna suffers from a lot of the things that Assemble Insert has going against it. Unfortunately, Galaxy Fräulein Yuna seems to suffer from severe ADHD disorder and can't keep its attention anywhere. Now, of course, this is largely a parody of Sailor Moon and other magical girl genres and staples, but a lot of the things that it references aren't available in North America, and even if they were, the thing is all over the place, even with the 5 episodes that it's allocated between the 2 OAVs that are put on this DVD, which collects all of Galaxy Fräulein Yuna together, both the first and second OAV's episodes in whole. It's just all over the place, as I said, and it's really not enough to keep the attention of the older crowd, but even the younger crowd will have a problem with all the eccentricities and all the jumping from here to there. So Galaxy Fräulein Yuna, not recommended. Next up, The Girl Who Leapt Through Time. Unfortunately, this movie's only been shown at movie houses across America and Canada, and hasn't really been released for distribution on DVD in the United States or North America. However, it has seen some limited releases in Europe, and it's been released in Japan. I watched this through a fan sub because that's about the only way you're going to be able to easily see this if you live in the United States. Anyways, The Girl Who Leapt Through Time is actually a sequel to a Japanese book that came out, about 40 years ago, and it essentially deals with the girl who one day learns that she has the ability to jump through time. Initially, she goes and uses this to do silly things like going back to eat pudding that somebody else ate before she could, but eventually she realizes that she's running out of jumps and she has to make them count. This movie I really wanted to like because of the high quality of animation, the very believable characters, and its time-traveling perspective. However, it kind of loses its momentum halfway through the film and never really picks it back up. So while I like The Girl Who Leapt Through Time, it's only getting a neutral. Now we're going to review Great Teacher Onizuka, also known as GTO for short. I'm going to review episodes 1 through 20. This series is somewhat of a guilty pleasure for me because it's one of those things that you may not want to admit around anybody, should I say general audiences, that you enjoy it. It's really more of a man's show given all of the panty shots and teacher fantasies that happen throughout this show, or should I say fantasies by the teacher. However, it's a really great series because even though Onizuka is a bit of a deviant who's an ex-gang member, he also has quite a heart of gold and a strong sense of justice, which really goes and elevates him above the scum that he so often puts the smackdown upon. So, Great Teacher Onizuka first starts off really strong, short story arcs, very enjoyable. Later on, gets into this kind of crappy story arc about some sort of really brilliant girl who considers herself above others, and she's untouchable because the school wants to keep her as part of the school because of her high IQ, which brings them in money because of raising up the standards of the school. However, of course, she's a total bitch, and I have no reservations about saying that, and Onizuka has to go and handle her in a different way than he's used to handling punks that he's had to deal before of both the male and female genders. Great Teacher Onizuka is a great series, and I think people should watch it who aren't easily offended by Onizuka's male fantasies. So I'm going to go ahead and give this one a recommended. Next up, Hyper Police, episodes 9 through 25. Yes, I know it's been a while since we've reviewed this series, but it's really great and I watched it all the way to its end. Unfortunately, Hyper Police towards the end decides that it's tired of going and having the cute one or two episode story arcs and starts either running out of material from the manga or catching up to material in the manga, and so it starts to have longer story arcs, including one where Natsumi's grandfather, as such, created a rift-in-time kind of thing that messed with people's minds and thought they were in different stages of their life and childhoods and got to live out some of their fantasies. All in all, though, Hyper Police is a really good episode, and even though some of the later episodes drag and the end of the series is a bit of a cop-out, it's still very charming, and I give Hyper Police a recommended. One of my favorite series of this year. Next, we have K.O. Beast, which is a series that the Right Stuff International used to release on DVD, but no longer does. After watching K.O. Beast, I can say for certain that now I realize why they don't release it anymore. It's, at best you could say, a children's show. It's about shape-shifting creatures that are gone and basically hated by several of normal humans. K.O. Beast deals with their struggles and attempts to go and get, I could say, a bit of social justice, but the series was so boring that I couldn't really watch it for very long. It's very simplistic, and its comedy is very childish. So K.O. Beast gets a not recommended. Next up, Magic Knight's Rayearth. Now, this series is also quite the classic anime, and I hear that there's quite a twist involved towards the end. However, I found it to be rather boring, and the animation rather crude, if you will. Not crude as in disgusting, but crude as in crudely drawn. Of course, it's an older series, and so it was done on, and it was also done on small budget, so that's somewhat to be expected. However, this TV series I just couldn't get into, but hopefully, besides Chobits, I can find something in the future that Clamp has done that I'll really like. Magic Knight Rayearth, however, gets a not recommended. Next, we have Rod the TV, which is a bit of a follow-up to Read or Die, but it is neither a sequel nor a nor does it take place off of the manga, which follows up Read or Die. And so, since both the first and second manga can be abbreviated ROD, they just called this series ROD the TV. It's about three sisters, affectionately known as the Paper Sisters, who have been assigned to go and protect the life of an artist, or author, I should say, who has had her life threatened by a series of bombing attacks and whatnot that has her publishers worried about her health. So, the Paper Sisters are hired on, and using their unique paper-bending abilities, including being able to make shields, airplanes, gliders, and what have you out of their paper, they have been assigned to her, much to the author's frustration. However, I couldn't really get into this series, and I didn't like it nearly as much as the Read or Die OAV, and so I'm only going to give this a neutral, especially given that it is full of cheesecake shots of bouncing breasts and panties, and I just didn't feel that was appropriate for the series. Next up, we have Rune Soldier. This is a fantastic parody series of most of our most beloved fantasy anime, and by that I mean medieval swords and sorcery sort of anime. Rune Soldier goes and takes all of this and kind of laughs in its face and goes in the opposite direction most of the time. Our main character, Louis, thus the original Japanese name of Louis the Rune Soldier, why they dropped his name off of the title for the American release, who knows. Bit of a crazy decision in my opinion. However, Rune Soldier is a great series, and Louis, who is a magic user at his father's magic school, uses his club, or should I say his magic staff, as a weapon more so than he uses it as a means for casting devastating magic. However, a trio of women who are adventurers needed a magic user to round out their group, and thus brought him aboard, much to the chagrin of, well, just about all of them. However, they grow closer and fonder to Louis as time goes by and realize he's not such a bad guy after all. Rune Soldier Louis belongs in any anime viewer's collection, and it is recommended not just for those who are willing to see a parody of fantasy medieval anime, but just anyone in general who likes comedy and endearing characters. So Rune Soldier Louis, I'm giving a top recommendation. Alright, next we have Supergirls. Now, this is going to be kind of funky because I'm going to be reviewing both the end and the beginning of a season. first we'll end up Supergirl Season 1, episodes 19 through 26, last two DVDs. These were all pretty good, and I liked how it kind of led up to the end, but obviously when it leaves off, it's only halfway through the series. Unfortunately, ADV decided not to go and pick up the second season of Supergirl, supposedly because the first season didn't perform so well, and after minusing out the licensing costs, really wasn't earning them enough money to go and do the second season. So, anyways, the first season of Supergirls was really great, and I'm going to give it a highly recommended. Only reason that it doesn't get more than that is because, well, the show is kind of a guilty pleasure, unlike Great Teacher Onizuka, though, not because of the content itself being a bit degenerate, but because Supergirls is a bit, let's say, pretty yet shallow. The character is very likable, very charming, great sense of justice in the main character, Ron Kotobuki. However, it's not a lot of depth, and some of the episodes in the first season are a bit, shall we say, repetitive, in other words, using just a slightly altered plot. But of course, the animators take this good-naturedly and even point this out in the preview for it, so it's not all bad. Supergirl Season 2, however, was done by The Right Stuff International. The Right Stuff didn't want to go and spend a ton of money doing a dub release, which can be at least $300,000 in some cases. And so they decided instead to go for a subtitled-only release. Every fan who pre-ordered the second season box set, the episodes were not released on individual DVDs, but only as a whole set containing episodes 27 through 52-ish. Everyone who pre-ordered got their name on the DVD as a bonus, and a thank you to them for pre-ordering and helping The Right Stuff put the money up front to get the series done, which I'm very glad they all did, because Supergirl Season 2 is a worthy follow-up to Season 1. There's some plot twists that I didn't exactly see coming, but are hilarious nonetheless, especially for fans of Yuya, who Ron calls second place because of his second place in a competition, and never bothers to learn his name, even though he pines for her. Supergirl Season 2, at least the episodes 27 through 37 that I watched, are very good, and you kind of want to go and hit the face of Oda Hata, who's going and treating Ron's friend like she's as worthless as the receipt he hands out at his record store. Anyway, Supergirl Season 2, I'm going to go and give a recommended. Missing the dub misses a lot out on the character of the animation, because you're constantly reading, and unfortunately, constantly reading goes and hurts comedies a bit. And there's a couple of new characters which aren't super duper, but all in all worth watching. Supergirl Season 2, episodes 27 through 37, recommended. Speaking of the Right Stuff International, this is the third Right Stuff International review we're doing this episode. Yes, I'm reviewing To Heart, the first DVD, which contains episodes 1 through 4. This is not worth watching. But I suppose I should tell a bit more about it than it's just not worth watching. To Heart is essentially a slice-of-life anime that is based off of a PC dating sim, which came out several years ago. It was rather popular and received a re-release on consoles and PC that removed some of the more erotic scenes. And thankfully, our domestic release of To Heart, the anime, had no such scenes ever existing, so we don't have to worry about naughty bits and mature situations. However, To Heart, like I said, is a slice-of-life anime, and these can go either one of two ways. You can end up with something like Azumanga Daioh, which is just wacky and off the wall, or you can end up with To Heart, which is very true to real life, but unfortunately is too true to real life, and takes an incredibly slow pace, boring you out of your mind as you try to get through the series. Now, it does get better as you work through the episodes, but I don't think most people will make it to the end of the first DVD. So, it's a series which is good, but it's best in, shall we say, it's best to watch with friends, or it's best to take a break every time it goes to the commercial break eye catches, because you're going to need it at the pace this show goes. So I'm going to give Volume 1 a neutral, because I think it's a good show, but it could be better. Last for this episode, at least last as far as the anime reviews go, is They Were 11, an anime movie that is straight out of the 80s. It's essentially a sci-fi whodunit, if you will. Actually, no one is outright murdered, but there's an unfortunate case, for you see, there were only supposed to be 10 people aboard this spaceship as a final test for the people's licenses to come aboard the intergalactic, whatever they're trying to get into, basically graduation to a space academy. But on the ship there are not 10, but 11 people. This raises the mystery of who is the 11th person who doesn't belong, why is he there, and is he trying to sabotage their mission to survive for 100 odd days on this vessel by themselves? Now, of course, this is about 20 years old, and so you can definitely say that the animation is not up to today's standards. However, the charm of hand-drawn animation shines through with this, and thankfully it was a relatively high production release, making it better than you might think. It also has a really engrossing storyline, but the replay value is greatly lessened once you go and find out the mystery of They Were 11, because knowing that, it, well, of course, makes the mystery no longer mysterious, and so it doesn't have a high level of replayability. However, They Were 11 is a really great show, and I enjoyed it, so I'm going to give this a highly recommended, just because it is that good. So if you get a chance to see it, and trust me, it's cheap these days, go ahead and check out They Were 11. And that's all for the anime reviews. Let's see what we have happening next. All right, time for some fan mail. Let's see what we have in the old inbox. Well, first, we had a question from Mate, who writes, "Huh, I was looking for a radio API in Java in Google, and I found this. It's great. Please, could you tell me how can you have a radio? Did you use an API? Thank you." Well, I wrote back to Mate, and told him how we use a embedded Java audio player to play all our episodes of ASO Radio, and that we are not actually a live radio broadcast. And he must have been grateful. I don't know. He never wrote back. All right. Next up, let's see. iTunes Store podcast created and approved. It looks like ASO Radio Experimental, the so-called experimental branch of ASO Radio, where I post little things where I'm trying out different recording techniques and sometimes interviews, has been approved and added to the iTunes Music Store. So I guess if you want to subscribe to that through iTunes, that's great to know. Well, I guess that does it all for the mailbox, at least all of the ASO Radio mail that we got for this episode. But hey, don't forget, you can always write in to us at ASO Radio by going to the ASO Radio website at www.nz17.com and click on the fan mail link to send us your own words to let us know how we're doing on the show and what you would like to see. And maybe, if you want to, you can give us a show that you'd like us to review. So, since I have a moment, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about what we have going on the NZ17 Productions websites. Of course, ASO Radio had a facelift recently, and all in all, I like it, but I think it needs a little more work. Large graphic in the middle kind of takes up a lot of screen real estate without really giving back to it, so I'm going to experiment around with that and see if I can make it even better. Over on Anafanatiku, Warp Shadow has been busy, of course, doing lots of reviews for the site and other features. Some of the more recent things that he has done include I'm pulling up the list right now as I speak. Let's see, recently, Warp Shadows reviewed the Irresponsible Captain Tyler OAV Collection, Sugar Sugar Rune Volumes 1 through 4, G Gundam, Kage Tora Volumes 1 through 3, and The Girl Who Leapt Through Time. As a matter of fact, since I reviewed The Girl Who Leapt Through Time on ASO Radio, let's see what Warp Shadow gave it. He gave it a rating of very good / excellent. And Warp Shadow writes, "Perhaps the thing that surprised me the most when I read about this movie is that I had no idea who the director was, although the movie is on par with the stuff that, say, Miyazaki or Cone makes." Well, if you want to check out the rest of this review, be sure to go to www.nz17.com and check out the review on Anafanatiku. Of course, we're going to be having a whole bunch of updates coming to the NZ17 Productions websites in the coming months, and I'd love to tell you all about them right now, but that would be mainly boring. So instead, we're going to go ahead and move on to the hotspot for episode 120 of ASO Radio. You know, I should have taken a moment to mention all the fantastic artwork and cosplay pictures that we have in the NZ17 Productions Artist Alley. If you go to NZ17.com and click on Artist Alley, you can see pictures from all our past anime conventions, as well as our Bandy fan art that we've been sent over the years. Anyways, we've got a whole bunch of stuff lined up for the hotspot, almost as much as we had for our anime reviews section. But since I don't want to go and spend forever in a day going and talking about it, instead, let's go ahead and start off with an excellent interview that I conducted with Vic Mañana a few months ago.
All right. Well, this, of course, is NZ17 from Acer Radio, and I'm here with Vic Mañana. Is that the correct way to say it?
That's exactly right. Good for you. Not many people do that very well.
Well, I wanted to make sure to say it right, so I ended up actually at the Adventures in Voice Acting website where they had done that video interview with you, and I noticed you were on their trailer. That's how I know how to say it right.
Well, good. You've done your homework. It's nice to be on the show with you.
Well, it's excellent to have you on here. We actually initially tried to get you on in June, and here we are in August, but I think our listeners will enjoy the fruit.
Better late than never, I hope. I hope it's better late than never.
There you go. But for all of our uninitiated out there, would you briefly introduce yourself?
Well, in a nutshell, my name is Vic Mignogna, and I'm a voice actor for several different anime companies. I've been a voice actor for about 10 years now, actually, 9 or 10 years. Whew, can't believe it. And I've done about 100 titles. Some of the more prominent ones have been Fullmetal Alchemist and Be an Angel and Dragon Ball Z and Trinity Blood and Bleach and Sayuki and tons of others, Macross and a lot of other shows. And it's been a wonderful 9 years or so. I absolutely love what I do.
You know, it's funny, that little list you gave of some of your most prominent titles, is each character you play in the various series is so different from the last.
Well, that's one of the fun things about voice acting, is you get the opportunity to play so many different characters. And what's especially fun is you get to play characters that you would never normally get to play, like on screen or on stage. You know, nobody's going to cast me as a 15-year-old kid, you know. you know, there are certain roles that you can't play because of your physical type, but that's one of the problems you don't have with voice acting.
Yes, in some of our previous interviews, some voice actors have actually done some live-action acting on film. Have you had any roles like that in the past?
I have. I've done a handful of live-action things. I've done a lot of stage, a lot of theater work, and then I've also done, I've done a handful of independent films and a few television shows. Nothing huge, no huge Hollywood blockbuster that people would know, but that's definitely part of some of my experience, yes.
And have you done a lot of voice-over work for commercials and other things?
I have, yes. I've done a lot of voiceover work for commercials. In fact, right now here in Houston, where I live, I'm actually the voice of Baker Jackson Nissan. And every month I record commercials, radio spots for Baker Jackson's locations around Houston.
Does anybody ever recognize your voice from those commercials?
They do. They actually do. The last time I did a convention here in Houston, some of the fans at the anime convention said, "We heard your Baker Jackson Nissan commercial." And I actually also wrote the jingle for Baker Jackson Nissan. So I do a lot of ad work as well.
A real Renaissance man.
Oh well, I sure love doing a lot of different things. I don't know if that makes me a Renaissance man, but I sure try.
Well, in my book, it does. But you must have been to a ton of conventions in the last year or two, judging by your hectic schedule that you have on your website.
Judging by my frequent flyer miles, absolutely. I have been going to a lot of conventions this year. I actually, it's really kind of funny because last year I did a good number, and I promised myself I wouldn't do as many this year. I try to stay very active with my church here in Houston, and of course, when you're gone on the weekends, you know, you can't be going to church. You can't be very active with your church if you're out of town on the weekends. But this year I had intended not to do as many, but then I get invitations, and especially invitations to cities that I've never been to, and with fans in certain regions of the country that I've not gotten to meet, and it's really hard for me to say no, because I get emails from kids in those areas and my fans in those areas saying, oh, I hope you come to this con, and we would love for you to come to this con, and so, I try.
Oh, that guilt is a powerful tool.
That's right, and they wield it like a weapon.
Now, of course, right now, Full Metal Alchemist is still quite popular. I'm sure a lot of conventions are inviting you to them because of your prominent role as the title character. Which countries have you been invited to other than the United States this year?
Well, this year so far I have been to London, and last fall I was in New Zealand and then Australia, and recently I've been invited to Ireland, and I expect I will be going back to New Zealand. I've already been invited back to New Zealand and Australia. It's been a long day. Wow, I just got home convention in Canada, and I'm yawning on your show. I'm so sorry.
Well, that's okay. It's a very exciting show.
They're like, man, the guest's even bored. I'm not listening to this. but those are the ones so far that I've been to. And have really, really enjoyed meeting the fans over in those areas. And, you know, Full Metal is very big, and I hope, certainly, that it will be a popular show for many years to come. But, working more recently on shows like Bleach and Trinity Blood and Tsubasa Chronicle, and now a show called Air, and I'm getting getting to be a part of a lot of new shows that I hope will generate a lot of excitement as well, because they're really great shows.
Yes, it's funny because, of course, anime in the non-Japanese world is usually translated for America first and then brought to other countries. So I imagine you see a lot of that lag as far as something coming out being popular in the States and then going over and being popular in Canada and then later on in the UK.
Yes. Yeah. You're right. You're exactly right.
So it's kind of like the wave is longer because of this.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, so, but you mentioned earlier about going to church, and I had listened to you on the Right Stuff International's Anime Today podcast from a few weeks ago, and that got me wondering exactly how it is that, or rather I should say, what goes through your mind when choosing a role to do or not to do, because obviously a lot of the roles that are in these shows don't always mesh with Christian ideas?
Well, that's a good question, and to be honest with you, I've gotten that question asked of me a great deal. But if you think about it,
Mr. Manana's wardrobe provided by Funimation.
if you think about it, actors don't just play characters that are them. You know what I mean? You wouldn't be acting.
Well, that's
true. You'd
just be the movie voiceover guy.
If you only played characters that were just like you, that believed the same things and acted the same way and behaved the same way, well, then you wouldn't be an actor. You would just be kind of being yourself on camera or on stage or behind a microphone even. I often remind people, when they ask me that question, I remind them that, first and foremost, I mean, I'm an actor, and these are just roles that I'm playing. I don't necessarily have
alchemic powers.
I don't have a great deal in common with every character I play, but that's the nature of acting. So I try to do my best and play each character as best that I can, while all along knowing that, you know, well, I, you know, for instance, you know, Ed may be a very agnostic character who's very bitter against God and very questionable about God because of the things that have happened in his life, but that doesn't mean I have to be.
Yes, it's funny you should say that, because I think if I went through all the things that he went through, I would not be so bitter about believing in God, because there's no way I would have lived.
Well, you know, that's a very interesting way of looking at it, actually. That's a very interesting way of looking at it. But, you know, the truth is, I don't fault anybody who would go through that kind of tragedy and that kind of heartbreak and disaster and be angry and bitter about it. I wouldn't begrudge anybody that. That seems like a pretty normal response, if you ask me. But
sure.
But then again, we have to remember, overarching all of this, is that these are fictitious characters. You know, at the end of the day, it's an animated show, and the characters are not real, and it's fiction.
Just like those characters on the news channels.
As I've often told people, if there are people out there that base their lives upon animated characters, then I would be much more concerned about that than I am about somebody who is a Christian actor who plays.
That actually does raise an interesting question. Have you had any, you've been to several conventions, not only this year, but over your entire career, have you had anybody who couldn't really get in their mind the separation between Vic the voice actor and Vic's character from their show?
No, not that I can think of. I can't think of anybody who didn't realize.
Could
you
hold on just 1 minute, please, sir?
Sure.
Thank you. Sorry about that, I got a call. But that's all taken care of now. But I'm sorry.
No, I have never had any problem with fans understanding the separation between the two. In fact, when they ask me the same question you just did,
you roll your eyes and think, here we go again, why me?
They understand.
Sorry about that.
They understand, and it makes perfect sense to them.
All right. Well, I was actually hoping if maybe we could talk about a couple of the roles that you've had in the past.
Sure.
Now, of course, you mentioned playing Edward Elric. I'm sure you get lots of questions about that. And in playing your role, you had to do a lot of, you know, different emotions. You had to be filled with angst, anger, sadness, love, just all sorts of emotions that you had to portray and yet stay consistent. So I wondered, what was it like playing the male protagonist in Princess Nine?
I love Princess Nine. Oh my gosh, I love that show. In fact, a lot of people, when they ask me, what character have you done that you feel the closest, like you feel he's most like you? And I often use Hiroki from Princess Nine as that example. I love that character. And that show is one of the favorites that I've ever done.
Yes, when I saw the show, I was quite enthralled with it as well. But when I saw it, it was actually after I had seen your work in Full Metal Alchemist. So since they both have blonde hair and a similar voice, I kept imagining Edward in the place of Hiroki, and it made it a hilarious show.
Well, to be honest with you, though, Hiroki's a little bit older than Ed, and Ed's a lot more of a spaz, to be quite honest with you. You know, Ed's a lot more high energy. You know?
Oh, I completely understand. Hiroki seemed to understand others much better than Edward would ever.
Yeah, Hiroki's a lot more of a level-headed, nice kind of a guy. Ed's a lot more of a rebel, I think.
Hmm. I would have to absolutely agree with you, though, that they should really make a sequel series to Princess Nine. That was just an excellent, well-done show.
I agree completely. I've been telling Matt Greenfield, who directed it, and who happens to really love that show as well. If you were to ask Matt, that's one of his favorite shows as well. I've told him for years, man, you just ought to write another, you know, you ought to write a follow-up season to it.
Yes, Princess Nine didn't seem to do very well financially at retail, but I think that if a follow-up series were released today, that it would do much better than the original actually had.
Well,
especially
if there was
a re-release.
I don't know if you have privy. I don't know if you have access to the numbers of how that show did. I mean, when you say that it didn't do very well, I don't know if you know for certain that is true or not, but.
Let's just say that I'm really good at pretending to know things.
But, you know, you got to realize that most of the shows actually that are done go directly to DVD. And so they're not going to have the kind of distribution, and they're not going to sell the kind of units that something that's been on television does. And the companies that put them out know that. So.
Oh, absolutely. All right, well, here's a completely different character from Hiroki. You actually played a role in the very, shall we say, eccentric anime series Excel Saga. What was it like in such a high-energy show?
Oh, I loved Excel, too. That was a really crazy show. And at the same time, though, the character that I played was not like a regular... you know, an episodic regular character in Excel Saga. I didn't get to be a part of the you know, the wackiness of that entire series. I got to play a couple of different little characters, and the most prominent one being Wolf, that was the leader of the pack of dogs. But yeah, Excel Saga was pure zaniness. Pure zaniness.
As later on, after Excel Saga, I watched through Street Fighter II V. I had seen it years ago, but the beginning of it, back in the bad old days of VHS. And later on, I eventually got far enough in to see you playing the character Vega. And I thought that must have been a very interesting role to play, essentially an eccentric, psychopathic rich boy.
Yes. Because I'm definitely not a rich boy, and I hope I'm not too eccentric. But, that was the first role I ever played, actually. Vega.
Was it really? That's interesting.
Ever cast. Yes. Street Fighter II was the first show I ever did.
And a pretty good show to start off with, I have to say.
Well, I appreciate you saying so. I didn't know a great deal about it at the time, but I was excited to try my hand at this thing called voice acting.
So how did you get the role in Street Fighter 2V? Did you just have a friend and he said, hey, come on, let's try this out? Or?
Oh, yeah, I had a friend who worked in the field and who was working at ADV already. And he said, you know, you've got a lot of background in acting. You ought to go and audition for this company in town that does Japanese animation called ADV Films, and I went and auditioned and got cast, and that was how it all started. It was quite by accident and very random and unexpected.
Much like life, I imagine. How has ADV changed since you came on to the staff, if you will?
Well, ADV has changed a great deal. Oh my gosh. A great deal.
For one, it's not called AD Vision anymore.
ADV Films was a very, very small company when I first started with them. It was one little studio and just a handful of people that were anime fans and loved it and wanted to make it available to other fans. And so they were very small when I started. And now, you know, they've grown leaps and bounds, as have many other anime companies, since the medium of anime has exploded over the last 5 or 6 years.
As they're practically the largest American-based anime company I can think of.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know the actual numbers. I mean, Funimation is also a very big company, and then there are several studios in LA that do a lot of work as well. But certainly ADV is one of the preeminent names in anime, bringing it to English audiences.
So have you been involved in very many productions that tried to use people from both the Houston area and people from Toronto or New York or L.A. in the production?
Oh, the only production that I've ever been a part of that incorporated people from every different market of anime voice acting was Full Metal Alchemist. That was actually the first, to be honest with you, that was the first and only show that I knew of, that I know of to date, that had voice actors from every one of the different markets that dub anime.
I can imagine it must be pretty difficult to synchronize everybody.
Well, it is difficult. It's just a logistical problem, as you can imagine. It's a logistical problem. And since then, I've certainly done a lot of work in Los Angeles, and I've worked in L.A., excuse me, worked in New York a little bit as well, and Dallas and Houston. I have yet to do anything in Vancouver. Canada is kind of its own entity, and I would love to be a part of something up there someday. I don't know the logistics of it and whether or not that could ever happen, but I'd sure love to.
Well, better get working on your French now. but
not a problem. They dub into English up there, thank heaven. I don't have to learn French.
One of the series you worked on was Kino's Journey, and it's a very philosophical series. Do you yourself like this series very much, or you play so many characters in it? I imagine you got to see a lot of it just from your own acting.
I actually love Kino's Journey. It was a really neat show. It was very beautiful. It was very beautifully animated. And I love that show a lot. I liked, again, you see, now there's an example. One of the characters I played was this wicked, maniacal king, right?
Which is why I mention it, yes.
Well, clearly, I am not a wicked, maniacal king.
Just two of the three.
Yeah, that's the beauty of acting, that I can play characters that I am not personally, you know, that I do not personally have anything in common with. So I love that Kino's Journey for just that kind of a reason, because I got to play some really neat characters, very much against my natural type.
As I don't know how much of a compliment it is, but I thought you did a very good role as the eccentric evil king.
Well, I will take that as a compliment.
Oh, good, because that's how I meant it. Now, the next show I wanted to ask about, it's a bit of an inspirational show. At least to me, I find it very inspirational. That's Kaleido Star. And it seems you just played a big hodgepodge of different people in this.
Once again, yeah, just a lot of different character roles and opportunities to do a lot of different things. And, yeah, I really enjoyed that for the same reason. If I'm not mistaken, one of the characters that I played on that was Mr. Lin, who was Sarah's
martial arts teacher.
Yes, martial arts master. And I love that, you know, I just absolutely love it. So.
Yes, it was a very funny role, very silly.
Thank you.
But yes, it's funny, Kaleido Star was actually a joint American-Japanese production where an American company was providing most of the funding, but it was animated in Japan. And so since the show is basically taking place in a fictional, if you will, alternative version of San Francisco or San Diego, everybody, and it's supposed to be American, so when they created the show, everybody, almost everybody, is just wearing T-shirts and pants, because that's how Japanese people see us, and I don't think maybe it's that far off.
I think they're probably right.
Yes, yes. But another funny part about it is because it was animated in Japan, a lot of the street scenes had to be flipped because the cars were driving on the Japanese instead of the American side of the road. So that's just always strikes me funny.
Yeah, you have to kind of take that stuff into account, I guess, you know?
Now, before the big Full Metal Alchemist anime, You were in another huge production, of course, Evangelion, which I imagine generated quite a lot of convention invites.
It did, but not for me, actually.
I should have phrased that better.
It's a good question, but it didn't generate invites for me because, number one, there are a lot of other shows that I've been a part of besides Evangelion, but more than that, I didn't play a huge role. In fact, it's very unfortunate that that I came to ADV right after they did Evangelion. They had just finished that series when I came to start working with them. And you know, who knows? Had I been with them, I might have gotten a chance to play Shinji. You know, I mean, you never know. I might have been able to audition for some of the other roles in that show. But
I will say that I did interview the voice actor who did the voice for Shinji, and I think that have done a good job in the role.
Well, thank you, Spike Spencer. Yeah, I know Spike very well. But I didn't play a huge role in Evangelion, and so I haven't gotten any invites because of that. But I did. I was very proud to be a part of Evangelion, even a small part.
I think that it's bitterly appropriate, though, that your character, which is essentially a computer technician, got just as much attention as they do in the real world. So, as cruel as that may be. Well, going from your motorcycle-loving Evangelion persona, completely different, once again, completely different role was Broly for the Dragon Ball Z show and the games.
Yes.
And what is it like just playing this big, strong, overpowered guy?
Well, what can I tell you? Except, again, I'm very proud to be part of the Dragon Ball Z world, absolutely. And, little known fact, I also played another character in Dragon Ball Z. I also played Berter, who was a member of the Ginyu Force. But the Broly's the big one that I was most known for. And even though
Broly
was a lot of fun...
figuratively and literally.
Yeah, really. Broly was a lot of fun, but he was very, very hard on the voice. Very hard on the voice. So, I don't miss doing Broly, suffice to say. He just really crashed me, and I developed all new respect for people like Chris Sabat and Eric Vale and Mike McFarlane and the people that have been doing Dragon Ball for hundreds of episodes, because it is not easy. All of that fighting and powering up and stuff is not easy.
Unfortunately, the name escapes me at the moment, but you mentioned just throwing out your voice going into these characters, and I can't remember her name, and I feel somewhat embarrassed, but the woman that played Excel in Excel Saga, Jessica, I believe, threw her throat out after trying to get all the series done quickly.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's definitely something that voice actors need to look out for, because, this is the way we work, and so you kind of have to be careful. If you get yourself too involved in something, you might throw it out,
Some starlets insure their legs. Maybe voice actors should insure their cords.
Well, actually, that has been known to happen before. I mean, people have done that before.
Well, I don't blame them. It can be really hard work. I know I just do a simple radio show. It's not nearly as much hard work as you guys do. But if I do a particularly long show where it's been a while, I make my throat very sore just from maybe an hour or two of talking. Going and doing these recording sessions, which I'm sure can go for several hours, must be a big strain.
Yes, it is. It very much is. People have no idea. Quite honestly, people have no idea how difficult it is to do it for an extended period of time is really difficult.
What are some of the ways that voice actors keep their throats from getting too sore quickly?
Different people, different people have different methods, quite honestly. And, you know, I don't have any magic answer except just, you know, be careful. Know your limits. You know
and
what I mean?
Stretch before
know your limits.
Excessive exercise.
know when you become familiar enough with your voice that you can tell when it's starting to go. You know?
That's a great rule of thumb to go and keep yourself fit and trim for all of your roles.
As much as possible. And you know something else? You know, there's a lot to be said for directors who care enough about their actors that they will not push them beyond their limits. There are probably directors out there that just push and push and push and push, and they keep pushing the actors to keep going, you know, give me another one, louder, longer, yell louder, be crazier. And you know, the poor actors are kind of at their mercy. But fortunately, most of the directors I've ever worked with are very, very cognizant and very sensitive to the fact that you know, we give out at some point, and they would rather have us fresh the next day than to be shot for a week.
Yes, I was actually thinking when you were talking there about how a lot of the fans that you would meet at a convention, they think mainly of the voice actors, but the ADR directors have a lot to do with the quality of a dubbing production.
Oh, yes, absolutely. They absolutely do. Oh, my goodness, yes. A massive amount. I mean, an actor brings what he personally can to the table, and an actor is going to bring ideas and bring a performance, but they're only going to bring a performance that the director approves of. I mean, the director's got to like what they're doing, and the director's going to give them directions, give them certain ideas and point them in a certain way, and not only just the one actually, I only have to worry about my role and doing a good job with my role, whereas the director has to juggle everybody's roles and weave all of these separate pieces together to make one smooth, solid piece. And that's no easy task.
The coveted gem of the cognitive whole. So if you would mind divulging a bit, what are some good directors that you've worked with? I'm not saying this is an exclusive list because we don't want to hurt anybody, but what are some of the good directors that spring to your mind just quickly?
Well, I mean, I've absolutely loved working with every director I've ever worked with. Some of the main ones that come to mind, I would say, are Matt Greenfield and Stephen Foster and David Williams and at ADV, along with Kyle Jones at ADV, John Swayze at ADV, and several others. And you know who's been doing some directing that's really good as well at ADV now, has started directing more, and that's Christy Auten, who is a very talented voice actress, and now she's doing some directing. And then up at Funimation, working with people like Mike McFarlane and Colleen Klinkenbeard and Caitlin Glass and Justin Cook, who used to direct, but he's a great director, and Chris Bevins, and just really, really good people all the way around. And then out in L.A., I mean, Mary Elizabeth McGlenn and Kirk Thornton and Jamie Simone, and then in New York, Mike Senna Nicholas. You know, I mean, there are just a lot of great people out there.
It's no wonder you have so many frequent flyer miles. But yes,
on my way to becoming a platinum member.
There you go, fly around the world for free. But yes, even though I mainly interview voice actors, I've heard quite a lot of people phrase Mr. McFarlane and Mr. Greenfield just saying, I mean, they've been involved in a lot of different productions over the years.
Oh yeah, yeah, very much so, very much so, and they're great. And Mike is a fantastic voice actor. I mean, that's how he started. He he started as a voice actor in Dragon Ball Z. And then, more opportunities came, and he got an opportunity to direct, and he did a great job with it. And the next thing you know, he's co-directing Full Metal Alchemist with Colleen, and they both did such an amazing job on that show. He went on to direct Trinity Blood and several other shows, and Colleen is now directing Tsubasa Chronicle, and she's done a lot of great projects as well. And they're both very talented voice actors in their own right.
I must imagine that you have lots of interesting stories from various recording sessions where just everyone started to get goofy, or you just all have been working so long that just something funny will happen or just off the wall.
Yeah, that definitely happens. There are plenty of stories out there. I wouldn't even begin to try to tell any because, first of all, there's so many of them on YouTube already, and second of all, I wouldn't even know where to begin. But yeah, we have a good time. We work hard, and we're very serious about doing a good job, and getting something that people are going to enjoy. But at the same time, we all love what we do. And I think it shows in the final product.
Yes, there was a company called Working Designs went out of business recently, and the company's founder had to take on several roles because they were just a small group, and one of them was he directed the voice acting. And one of the things that he would do in order to go and help the actors relax if they were getting too stiff or frustrated is he had about 3 different CDs, and he would pick one of them at random and play them because they all contained fart tracks. That was the entirety of the CDs, and he would just play these, and after a while, no one could keep a straight face. So it's voice acting definitely sounds like an adventure every time you go in for a new show.
Yes.
So speaking of...
You never know what to expect in each new audition. And, you just have to keep coming through. You got to keep coming through.
Speaking of auditions...
One second.
No problem.
I actually do have another interview at 9 o'clock. I just found it here. It was a completely different interview at 9 o'clock.
Have a little tight schedule. I should have called you earlier.
Yes. I didn't even realize that. Yes.
All right then. We'll just go ahead
Was there a lot more that you wanted to cover? Or?
There's not a ton. I was just going to ask you to talk a little about some of the current roles you're involved in Bleach and in Macross. I believe you're playing the lead role in Macross.
Yes, and that was something that we recorded a while ago. That's not new. I mean, Macross has been out for a while. But Bleach is recent, and Tsubasa Chronicle is recent, and AM Driver is recent, and Air is very recent, and Innocent Venus is recent, and The Chevalier is recent, and hopefully there's some new ones coming down the pipe as well.
Well, I imagine you would like everybody to see all the shows you're in, but if they could only see one of those, which one would you most recommend?
Oh, I would never do that. I can't. I could never do that.
Oh, you're so tricky.
I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. There are too many good shows out there, and I would never be able to just pick one.
All right. Maybe we can trick you next time. But it's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure interviewing you. I'm glad you could make time in your obviously very busy and hectic schedule to talk with us between conventions and recordings. So it's much appreciated.
It is my pleasure.
And,
it is my pleasure, and thank you so much for inviting me.
And I'm certain that our fans will continue to support all the productions that you are in. So, once again, thank you.
You know what? Hey, can you hear me?
Oh, yes.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. I had my phone on mute. I was answering you, and you couldn't hear me. No, I was saying, I'm so sorry. I was saying thank you so much. I sure enjoyed chatting with you a little bit, and I appreciate you taking the time to give me a call, and we could talk about some things, and it was a pleasure to be part of your show.
Well, hopefully next time ASO Radio interviews you, we will be meeting you face-to-face at a convention.
Let's hope so. I would love that very much.
All right. Well, thank you very much once again. It was Vic Mignogna, and it was a pleasure, sir.
All right. I hope all of you enjoyed that. And be sure to expect future interviews that ASA Radio will be conducting with other voice actors and anime industry veterans and newcomers. All right. Well, this has been in coming for a while. I was sent two review copies of a game, or rather I should say two games, from a series called Blackwell, both Blackwell Legacy and Blackwell Unbound. These are both PC adventure game titles, and I have to say I enjoyed them quite a bit. The Blackwell series is about a few generations of family of the Blackwell family, who are all psychics who have the power to communicate with the dead. They have, if you will, a family legacy of Joey Malone, who is their connection to the spirit world, if you could say, and it kind of has a buddy relationship between them, one ghost detective and one human detective, if you will, who work together to make the ghosts and spirits realize that they are dead and to help them move on to the next world. The first game introduces us to Rosangela Blackwell, who has a hard time accepting things and getting into it. Unfortunately, we have a hard time getting into the voice acting of this first entry in the series, because Blackwell Legacy, let's just say, it has a lot of talent in the show, or should I say, a lot of talent in the voice acting. However, some of the directing could have been a lot better and made the voice acting in return even better. And unfortunately, both games had a number of bugs in them. Thankfully, though, neither one of them had any severe cases of problems. Both games had an enjoyable story, but I found myself both liking the main character in Blackwell Unbound much more than the main character in Legacy, because Rosangela, the character from Legacy, is a real whiny, woe-is-me sort of character, whereas the one in Unbound is much more at peace with herself and happy with her choices, even though, of course, she is a chain smoker who kind of has a jaded side to her. But if you had to deal with the tragedy of the undead all the time, you wouldn't be too happy a camper either. So anyways, Blackwell Legacy, Blackwell Unbound, I'm going to review them together. If I was reviewing them apart, I'd give Blackwell Legacy a neutral and Blackwell Unbound a recommended, because Legacy was obviously the first foray into the series, and Unbound feels much more polished because you already have the dynamicness of the duo of Joey and our Blackwell girl working together, whereas Legacy kind of has the rough spots of getting everyone introduced and things up to speed, and you really only take on one case, whereas Unbound sees you helping several ghosts which all tie together. A lot of people have complained about the ending of Unbound, which, upon reflection, could have been done better, but on the other hand, I thought was rather workable. So, as a pair, they get a recommended. Next, I'm going to review Contra 4 for the Nintendo DS. This is one hardcore, bad, I'm just talking about Contra 4, sort of a game. This game is super hard, and I'm not just saying that because I'm some sort of pansy current-gen gamer who can't handle any difficulty, somebody that's never cut their teeth on an arcade game or had them had their butt handed to them in a game of Street Fighter. But Contra 4 really is a difficult game, even on the easy difficulty that gives you 10 continues and a bunch of lives per continue. And it is an excellent tribute to the past 20 years of Contra games, which is why Contra 4 came out. It's a 20th anniversary tribute to the original Contra being released all the way back in 1987. However, the game wasn't programmed by the original people that did it, but rather by WayForward Technologies, which is probably a company you've never heard of, but trust me, they do a good job. Their original properties, though, could use a little more polishing in the future. You may remember when I reviewed Shantae for the Game Boy Color, or Sigma Star Saga for the Game Boy Advance. However, Contra 4, coming from a well-established line of games, they knew exactly what they were doing with this and pelted out a wonderful game. It's entirely in 2D except for a few 3D levels, which have you doing the classic Stage 2 style of Contra gameplay. And all in all, there's not too much to say about this. Basically, two guys with attitudes and large guns, almost big enough to rival their own muscles, go and kill hundreds of aliens in their task of driving back Red Falcon and the other evil aliens which he has brought with him to basically destroy the Earth. But plot isn't important in a game like this. It's all about the action, and the levels and gameplay in this are really well done. Sometimes it feels a little cheap with the depth that it gives you, but the music, gameplay, and graphics all come together in a wonderful collection to make this game well worth playing, and that's even before you start unlocking extras like the original two games in the series. So Contra 4 I'm going to give a highly recommended. The only thing keeping it from the top recommendation is it really could have used a level select once you beat the game. Next, we have Izuna, Legend of the Unemployed Ninja. This game is actually a dungeon crawler that was supposed to have been a Game Boy Advance title. However, since it was released late in the life of the Game Boy Advance, they decided instead to do a little bit more work and put it on the Nintendo DS, and boy does it ever feel like a Game Boy Advance game. The graphics are Game Boy Advance and feel, the sound especially feels like it came from a Game Boy Advance game, and the gameplay, well, is about 40 years old, meaning that it plays like any randomly generated dungeon crawler. It starts off easy enough. I believe the first dungeon is only 5 levels deep. But by the time that you get through the story mode of the game, I believe the final dungeon is 40 or 50 levels deep, and each dungeon is significantly more difficult than the one that came before it. And, of course, since all the levels, except a few of them, such as the boss fight level, are randomly generated, you can't really use any pre-mapping strategies to help you get through the dungeons, and so Izuna kind of lends itself more to planning rather than strategizing and memorization. And one of the things that leads to this is that if you die in the dungeons, you'll lose all the items you had on you and all of the money, but retain the experience. So it's important to realize when you're reaching your limit so that you can back out of the dungeon and get back to the town so that you can retain all of your items and your money instead of dying and losing it all. Anyways, all in all, Izuna's was pretty fun for a dungeon crawler, but I got discouraged once the enemies started getting too difficult and the dungeons too deep down to really feel fun. But if I had persevered, there's actually a few more extra dungeons and a hidden village to find in the town once you finish it, so there is a good amount of replayability, especially when you get to the final hidden dungeon, which is more or less a complete rogue-like game, allowing for completely random dungeons and what have you, and perhaps even unknown depth. I think it may be 100 levels. Anyways, Izuna, Legend of the Unemployed Ninja gets a neutral. Let's see, what else? Oh, well, I should review... Man, I got so many games I haven't believed I haven't reviewed yet. Let's start with Os Tatake Owinden for the Nintendo DS. This game is actually the precursor to Elite Beat Agents, which was released in America. The developer has a strange habit of having two different series. One is Os Tatake Owinden, which is more like Go Fight Cheer Squad, if you translate the name, and also Elite Beat Agents. Elite Beat Agents gets published everywhere in the world, but so far the Owinden series has only seen release in Japan. So it's kind of strange, but what can I say? That's the choice made. The game is very good and plays very similar to Elite Beat Agents. The only thing is the graphics in this aren't quite as refined, and there's not as many sections you can skip, such as when you're scored at the end of the level, or the beginning part, because the way a stage works is you have an introductory animation, then you have the game starts with a little bit animation there, then somebody shouts for the Owinden team to help them, then you play, then you get various cutscenes throughout the course of the game, very short, maybe 10 seconds, and then you get to the end, and it's either a good ending, bad ending, or whatever, then you get your score ranking, blah blah blah. Owinden, being the first game, isn't as polished as the later games, and you can't skip the animation after the introduction, and you can't skip the score ranking at the end, and you can't save replays back for you. However, the game has a great selection of songs, I really enjoyed it, and it's going to get a highly recommended. Now, a more recent release is Moeru Neketsu Rhythm Damashi Os Tatake Owinden 2, possibly the longest titled game we've ever reviewed on Acer Radio. This is the third game in the Rhythm series, taking place after Elite Beat Agents, and so it carries over all the refinements of that series, including better graphics and much more 3D integration. Unfortunately, the 3D map in Owindan 2 is kind of sluggish to navigate in comparison to the 2D map, which was in Ostatake Owindan, the original game. And so it loses some points for trying to integrate 3D, but just not having the snappy feel that it had with 2D. And the song selection feels a lot safer, too. It's a lot more pop stuff, not as much, I guess you could say, variety to the music. But it is fun. Unfortunately, some of the plot feels really recycled from Elite Beat Agents, and so that also brings it down. So while it does have some of the improvements that Elite Beat Agents brought over Odin-Dan, it also is a bit of a step back, and so it gets a highly recommended instead of a top recommendation. So speaking of Nintendo, there's been a lot of things released for the Nintendo DS that aren't explicitly video games. There's been training programs such as Brain Age, Brain Age 2, Flash Focus, which have seen released in North America, as well as other titles that are supposed to teach you French and Spanish, and even increase your vocabulary. But one of the more interesting ones for me is the Nintendo DS browser, which is actually running a embedded... Well, I guess you couldn't really say embedded, but a small form factor version of the Opera web browser. If you've ever tried to browse the internet on a cell phone, you know how frustrating it can be because the hardware is very limited, and thus what you can do on the internet is very limited, mainly only to text sites. The Nintendo DS Opera browser, however, tries to go and give you the full internet experience on a portable device. You can actually experience JavaScript games and websites that use cascading style sheets, so it supports most of the modern web. It doesn't support third-party plugins, however, like Flash or Java, but that's to be expected from such a portable release. After all, they had to release a RAM expansion pack to plug into the Game Boy Advance port just to make it possible for you to go and browse the internet on your Nintendo DS browser. But for what it is, it does a very good job. It has two different modes, an overview mode, which has one screen acting as a zoomed-in portion of a website, while the other screen shows you the whole website, so you can go and use your stylus to move around on the touch screen to read different parts of a full-sized page. Or you can switch into the dual-screen mode, which will shrink this, the website down to fit on your DS for easy scrolling up and down. So, what's more to say about this? It's a very good browser. Lots of thought went into the layout. If you spend the time to learn all the shortcuts that you can do with the buttons and the stylus and the different modes, it'll really pay off, especially when doing your bookmarks and whatnot. I would recommend searching out any sites made for cell phones or portable devices, as they will be much more friendly to the Nintendo DS browser. JavaScript-laden sites, especially ones that make extensive use of cascading style sheets and JavaScript, are very slow to load on this browser, and so I recommend that you either disable some of those features, such as rendering of graphics or use of JavaScript, or just find portable versions of the sites in question, and you'll have a very nice time on this. It won't be replacing a browsing experience on a regular computer anytime soon, but for on-the-road browsing, such as at hotels with wireless access, or while on the train, or in transit, or at a Starbucks or McDonald's, the Nintendo DS browser is a very good experience, and I'm giving it a recommended. Alright, now we've got Puzzle Quest. This is a cross between Bejeweled, the popular casual PC game, which sees you matching sets of three gems to make them disappear, and an RPG. It takes elements from both to put together kind of a mix-mash of peanut butter and chocolate, which ends up actually tasting pretty good together. Puzzle Quest sees you going and trying to stop the evil lord Bane from bringing destruction upon your human kingdom, as well as the kingdoms of elves and orcs and, well, I guess Bane uses orcs, but you go and help things like centaurs and other things in the quest to take down Lord Bane. There is, of course, the main quest, but there are dozens of side quests you can take as well. The gameplay does get a little bit trying because along the path to your different destinations, enemies will show up. You can either try to take a path around them, But oftentimes you'll have to go and fight them anyways to get where you want to go, especially some quests which will send you all the way around the world to get to it. To its credit, they try to keep things as varied as possible. When you forge weapons, instead of having to fight an opponent at a game of Bejeweled, you just have to go and match so many of different types in order to forge your weapon. But they add a lot of variety, a lot of different challenges to forging weapons, learning spells, training your mounts. This is all done with the classic gem-matching gameplay that you'll find in titles like Bejeweled or Zookeeper, which is another Nintendo DS game. And the RPG elements are pretty good. The characters are all pretty believable for what they are. I mean, they fall into a lot of archetypes and whatnot, but you can see from their perspectives. You get lots of different classes and characters to choose from to play as, which makes it nice, but doesn't really affect the storyline that much. And, Bejeweled's, Puzzle Quest is a pretty good game. League's better than Bejeweled because you've got to use a lot of strategy when selecting your spells and choosing your options when fighting against enemies, because unlike Bejeweled, where it's just you trying to make matches before running out of time, your enemy gets a turn after you take a turn. And so you have to go and say, well, if I match this, then the next turn he'll attack me by getting 3 skulls lined up. So instead, I'll line up these 4 gems, get an extra turn, take out these 3, then he won't be able to match those skulls. By making the red, yellow, blue, and green gems disappear, you fill up your red, green, blue, and yellow magic types, and can then carry out spells once you have enough of each. It's actually rather fun, and thankfully, it's never overbearing, it's never overcomplicated, and typically is a lot of fun. You can either play it as a pickup kind of game, you know, play 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, or play for an hour or two at a time. Either way is a great approach with this, especially since the game saves for you constantly, so there's no need to worry about that. The only problems with this game really is you have to listen to the same music over and over again. I think maybe they may have a total of less than 10 music tracks to this, and generally like the same 3 are used the most often, so it gets very, very boring. And the other problem, the music is very low fidelity, kind of hurts the ears to listen to it. And the graphics are very lackluster in comparison to the other versions of this game. Oftentimes, I encountered game-freezing bugs where I'd be in the middle of a fight or right after a fight, the game would freeze up, or there'd be graphical glitches all over the screen. Pretty awful stuff, but like I said, the constant saving that the game did keeps you from ever having to do much backtracking. So, Puzzle Quest for the Nintendo DS is definitely a flawed game, but its slight blemishes, including inferior graphics and sound, do not keep the core gameplay from shining through, and so I'm going to give Puzzle Quest for the Nintendo DS a recommended. Finally, for our reviews of video games this episode, and, you know, I've got a whole bunch of manga that I need to review, but we're just going to wait on that until a future volume of Acer Radio, because this one's getting long enough, I think. Anyways, the last video game review we're going to do is Sonic Rush Adventure for the Nintendo DS. Now, those of you who listened to my review of Sonic Rush for the Nintendo DS knows that I heaped praises upon that game. However, Sonic Rush Adventure makes them go, you know what? They really liked the music in the last game and the atmosphere. Let's screw all that up by having other people do the music, and let's make the game super kiddie. Now, I'm not going to go in detail everything that's wrong with this game, just the highlights. We have robot dinosaurs, robot pirate that have wills of their own, who are apparently going and terrorizing this island chain that the game takes place in. You're assisted by your quote-unquote captain, who is a very talkative raccoon girl named Marine the Raccoon, who has a very large selection of Australian and New Zealand slang that she's constantly using, and makes her almost feel like a stereotype than a real character, and her over-enthusiasm and whatnot makes her feel like an anime stereotype as well. So it's kind of a meshing of somebody took out a, you know, slang book for New Zealand and mashed that together with an anime personality stereotype, and we ended up with Marine the Raccoon. Which some of the lines of dialogue are dubbed over, which would be nice if it wasn't so atrocious as far as the storyline is concerned. And, of course, you know, you can't have a Sonic game with, oh my goodness, Robotnik showing up. And just the whole game's very childish, very predictable, and the music, which was excellent in the previous game, is just ridiculous in this game. And they decided to go and say, oh, everybody loved Rush from the previous game, the female fire cat, if you will. Let's bring her back in this game for no really good reason. And so Sonic Rush Adventure is really a screwed up game in comparison to the previous entry. I hope for the third Sonic Rush game they decide to go more back to basics with what made the original so successful, including having an awesome, cool guy attitude, always focusing on the gameplay instead of having Japanese text adventure crap happening before and after every level. And really, bump it back up to the age demographic it was aimed at in the previous game, and we can talk about me maybe purchasing again. But if you do another Sonic Rush Adventure screw-up, Sega, I don't think I'm going to bite. The only thing that's saving Sonic Rush Adventure from being thrown into the scrap heap, besides the fact that once you actually get to play the real stages of the game, the only thing keeping this from the scrap heap is that it has a quest mode. By completing various quests, you unlock various extra things, and this is the only place where you're going to find any real challenge. Most of the stages that you play in the story version of the game are a great big pushover and pretty easy to get through. But playing the challenges actually gives you challenges, which is awfully nice in such a kid-centric game. Unfortunately, it also loves to go and make us play like The Legend of Zelda, the GameCube one, where you had to go and explore the seven seas. And unfortunately, Sonic Rush Adventure makes us explore the seven seas in order to find out where Johnny, the jet ski riding pirate robot rival of Sonic the Hedgehog, is, so you can race him and get a Chaos Emerald from him. Thankfully, when you finally find Johnny in one of the several locations he shows up, if you fail to get the emerald, you can try again right away. But while sailing, you have to take one of four different vessels, and you have to do this mini-game until you can get to wherever you're going, and since you don't have a map of the ocean but must explore to find everything, it gets very tedious, especially since the only way to get better boats and the only way to improve the boats you already have is by replaying levels you've already been to collect materials which are put together through some sort of crazy alchemic magic that they have in this world that Sonic and Tails have ended up in this game, in order to go and upgrade things. So lots of wrong with this game. The only thing that should be salvaged from this game for any sequel should be the challenge quests that they have you to do. Everything else should be dropped like a hot sack of potatoes that have been dropped in acid. Sonic Rush Adventure for the Nintendo DS gets a neutral. Why not recommended? Just enough to go and keep me from hating it. That's why it doesn't get a not recommended. Well, that brings us to the end of this spectacular New Year's Day edition of ASO Radio. We're starting January 1st, 2008 off with a bang, and we hope to make the year 2008 an unforgettable one for ASO Radio fans. We're looking forward to reading all of your fan mail, viewing all your fan art, and doing a whole bunch of great interviews and convention coverage for you in the future, as well, of course, our staples news and previews that we have on the show. Well, it's been fun. I hope you enjoyed our minigun reviews of all those video games and anime, and of course our interview with Vic Mignogna. And I hope to see you on episode 121 of ASO Radio. And I guarantee I won't wait 3 months to come out with the next episode like I did with this one. Anyways, for ASO Radio, episode 120, this is NZ17, signing out.